Hi, this is Chris Atwood from The Alternative. We're joined on the line with Mike Score from the Flock of Seagulls. Mike, how's it going today?
Today, it's going pretty good. Like I said before, it's a rainy day, so I get to do lots of things in the house instead of going out. And, you know, I'll spend my time probably in my home studio writing and messing about.
It's a good day in Florida, by the way, not in England.
Florida, yeah. I mean, I spent a long time in England dealing with cold weather, and then one day, well, you know, having come to America in the 80s and been to Florida and seeing how sunny it was, I went, you know, I'd rather be there than sitting in Liverpool freezing. So I moved out here permanently.
So speaking of England, and flashback to the mid to late 70s, Flock of Seagulls formed. How did they form, and why did you start a band?
I was in another band in Liverpool. I was a bass player when I really just started to get into music. And I heard some, you know, some punk stuff, and I was kind of like, oh, I think I could do that, you know. Picked up a bass and started to play. And I joined a band called Tuntrick, who went on to become Hamby and the Dance. When they got signed and changed their name, I left. And I decided to start my own band. First of all, we were called Level 7, but then another band came out called Level 42, so we had to change the name. I was at a Stranglers concert, Stranglers being my favorite band of the time. In one of their songs, they yell out, "A Flock of Seagulls." I swear that he looked at me and said, "A Flock of Seagulls," and I took it as a sign and went back and rubbed the name Level 7 off the board and put "A Flock of Seagulls." That's how the name was born.
Was the Stranglers song "The Toiler on the Sea"?
Yeah, that's the one. And strangely enough, that I just got that album the day before we went to see them, and "Toiler on the Sea" was the standout track to me.
When you were in Liverpool, prior to being in the bands, or when you were in the early days of the bands, you were a hairdresser. What was that like in the late 70s, early 80s?
Yeah, well, it was interesting. You know, there was punk styling. We were like a punk style hairdressers. We used to do grannies and punks. So, you know, we used to do a lot of coloring, and we used to go to all the kind of underground clubs and stuff like that. And we met a lot of people, and they wanted their hair blue and green. I think, you know, because the 70s was quite depressed, when the kids went out, they wanted to be a bit crazy. Mm-hmm. They came to us for that kind of thing, probably because we were cheaper than anywhere else in Liverpool. And we kind of weren't afraid to experiment on them. So we got a bit of a name for doing that kind of stuff. And like I said, because we went to those clubs as well, you know, we were really working on our friends' hair. When we started the band, you know, hair was obviously one of the things we could do. So being Bowie fans, you know, and his hairstyle at the time, we went for a cool hairdos, you know. I mean, two of us in the band that when we first started had Ziggy style haircut.
Your haircut is extremely, back then, was unique, and I kind of had a Flock of Seagulls haircut because of that. I mean, there's so many people that were influenced, obviously, by the videos of yours, MTV, and music back then, and what they would see in pictures. But how did you get that unique haircut of yours?
We were playing a gig, and I was trying to get my Ziggy to stand up on end. And Frank, who was the original bass player with the band, he, you know, we were both vying for position in the mirror. We're blow-drying our hair, and I think Frank just put his hand on the top of my head and said, "Scoot down a bit, Scory," and it just kind of flattened the middle of my hair. And at that time, the manager was like, "Come on, stop, you know, being divas and get on stage." So basically, I just went out like that, and people saw it, and they were like, "Wow, your hair's crazy. I love it." Because it was just stood up at the sides and long at the back and fell down the front. The whole thing then became, "Wow, that was cool. I'm going to develop this," you know, and it became the trademark.
Your signature style for the Flock of Seagulls.
Yeah, yeah.
Seen in so many great videos that you had in the early days of the Flock. So it's 1982, MTV's out for about a year or so. How important was MTV for your band, the Flock of Seagulls?
I think if it wasn't for MTV, we'd still be a local band in Liverpool. You know, we had our record deal. We were making our album down in London. Jive Records, who we were signed to, they came and they said, "There's this new thing." I don't think they really knew what to do with us, because they were, you know, with new waves still being new and record companies hadn't quite caught on to it, they were looking for an avenue. And I think when MTV came out, they saw that as a way of us getting, being noticed. Because, you know, when you're a style band, kind of like we were, if people don't see you. They don't understand what it's all about. You know, they wanted us to make a video, which we had no idea what it was. You know, to us it was, oh, it's a little promo thing. But when we saw it on MTV, we realized that this was a whole new way of getting to people, you know, to be seen, not just heard. Because if you're just going to be heard, it's a hell of a thing to get in front of those 10,000 bands that have already got record deals and getting on the radio anyway. MTV was almost like the new wave breakout. We got on that. I think they had 8 videos for the first day they opened, and they played us every hour on the hour. So we ended up being played in Kansas, you know, in Boise, in as well as like New York and LA and stuff like that. Probably even down in Rockledge, you know, in Florida. All these little places where they had cable TV and MTV came on, people saw us. The kids that were looking for music, looking for something new, you know, they tuned into MTV, and it was like, wow, what are those guys? And so for us, it was a huge breakthrough opening, you know.
And soon after your videos came out, especially Iran, there were so many people that had your haircut across the United States, me being one of them as a high school kid. When you made the video, Iran, I'm sure it was extremely low budget, because I was remembering it last night as I was looking at it, and it was really simple with just a bunch of stand-up mirrors, some dry ice fog machines, you guys sort of in the center, and women that appeared to be wearing black plastic trash bags with, you know, great face makeup. You know, almost.
I mean, I don't know what the budget was, but I think we spent more on makeup for ourselves than the whole budget for the video. But it turned out to be a classic, you know.
95.9 WATD, A Flock of Seagulls, I Ran. Tonight we are joined by the lead singer, Mike Score. Of all of your songs, which is your favorite and why?
Well, you know, it chops and changes. When I wrote Space Age, I got in from rehearsal one night and wrote Space Age. It wasn't really called Space Age. It was about dropping the bomb, you know, because I'd seen some show about Hiroshima or something like that. My idea was this. Space Age was that the music should be beautiful, but the lyrics should be horrendous. And it shows the difference between, you know, the bomb ended the war, which was a beautiful thing, but it was a horrendous thing to do to end the war, you know, talking about the Second World War.
Sure.
So that was my idea. So a couple of times playing it in rehearsals, I think my brother said, you know, the lyrics are a bit, you know, it's not going to make people happy. So I just thought, okay, you know, and I think Frank then said to me, it sounds like a Space Age love song. So we called it that, and then I rewrote the lyrics to just, you know, to be real simple. Sometimes it takes just that to turn a song into, you know, what would be an underground song into a pop hit. So Space Age for a long time was my favorite, and then Wishing became my favorite, just because I remember when we recorded it, I was basically given free rein to do what I liked on the synth. And that song ended up, I think, being 13 minutes long, but just lots of synth playing in it and making the sound. So it just became, wow, this is awesome because I could do what I want. I wasn't constricted or restricted to 3 or 4 minutes. And then, of course, every time you write a new song, that becomes your favorite for a while, you know. I Ran was, ever say it was a favorite, because when we wrote that song, we kind of went, okay, it's finished, put it aside, you know, because it was quite rocky, and we were more new wavy at the time, more electronic-y. Only later on, when it was properly recorded, did it really start to stand out as a great song, you know. So every song in the end becomes a favorite for a while.
And in 1989, Flock of Seagulls, the core of them, you disband. Fast forward, what's Mike Score been up to the last 2 decades?
Really? I early on when I wasn't used to it, I wasn't into playing live that much, but you know, we did huge tours, and it was quite scary to go on and, you know, to go from like playing a place in Leeds in England to 500 to playing a stadium with the police of 60,000-70,000.
Wow.
You know, so that was quite scary, and of course everything is very restricted because of the way things are and insurance and stuff like that. But once that all faded away and I started to play clubs with the new version of the Flock of Seagulls, I really started to enjoy playing live.
Mm-hmm.
So really, I just got into playing live, and then suddenly it was, as Pink Floyd say, 10 years gone, you know? So it was a case then of just enjoying being in music still, you know, because some people, they're in music for a couple of years, they have a couple of hits. They fade away and, I don't know, become bus drivers or something. And I'm one of the lucky ones that even today I can still do music, still enjoy it. I don't have to worry too much. I think if you get too big, it can become cumbersome, you know. It can lay on you and take you over. But I have a good time with it. I have a nice life with it. And I'd say to anyone out there, any kid, just, you know, do it for enjoyment and just keep doing it, because that's, to me, the real success has been just to keep doing it. I've been doing it for, I don't know, 33 years now or something.
Right.
And you know, I've gone on and done the solo album, which, you know, took me 20 years to get together before I finally woke up one day and went, okay, I'm going to make a solo album. And now I'm writing for another solo album. And at some point, I'd like to do another Seagulls album.
And the solo album that you're referring to that came out, was it 2014, Zebrata, was that the name of it?
Yeah.
And there's a little bit of a sort of, I don't know if it was a mystery behind that, but I was reading that you guys were driving out to California and the recording equipment and some of the files, I think it was for this album, was the van stolen and all the equipment as well?
Yeah, we went out to L.A. and we had a few shows to do, and then a couple of weeks off and then a few more shows. So I said, you know what, I'm going to take all the stuff and I'm going to go in the studio out there with the drives, with all the tracks on and stuff like that, and, you know, and add a bit more to it and enhance stuff and do what I thought needed doing. But At one of the gigs, the van got stolen. I had all our equipment in, all the recording stuff in. And so that put an end to the studio. But what it did for me was it was like a sign, and it said, you've done enough to this album. You've got mixes. It sounds good. Put it out. So, you know, we compiled what we had and put it out as an album. And I think it sounds great. It's a bit 80s. It's a bit modern. And for me, it was a great relief to just go, oh, finally I've recorded something else and put it out. And, you know, people that have heard it like it. And we go on from there.
And you mentioned earlier in the conversation sort of, you know, the 80s revival shows that are, you know, always popping up in the summertime here as well as overseas. Any chance of the original members of the Flock of Seagulls getting back together for a tour?
Well, we tried it once. I think it was in 2004, and it didn't work out. I mean, we did a couple of shows, and we did the TV show Regeneration or something like that.
Right.
And, you know, we still had the same feeling between us, but we also had the same problem.
Sure.
It's kind of like going back to an old girlfriend, and suddenly you go, oh, now I know why we split up, you know?
So, we've all been there.
Although I wouldn't say absolutely no, I would say the chances of it happening are about 1%.
Right.
I'm actually, you know, I'm happy the way it is now.
Mm-hmm.
And there's some diehard fans that go, oh, you know, it's got to be the original band. And I just say to them, it's like, you know, it's not the 80s anymore. Move on. We've moved on. We've got other things to do.
Right. Life moves forward.
Yeah, you know, and the Seagulls, in the 80s, was a product of its time. That's the way I look at it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and if we formed up again now, then we couldn't jump back 30 years or whatever and then go, oh, it's going to be the same.
Right.
You know? So it may be fun to do it and do a tour and have a laugh like that, but really, it would never be a permanent thing, even if it happened.
And speaking of today, especially new music today, what bands have your ear right now?
Right now, I don't listen to any new bands.
Oh, okay.
To me, I give them a listen. I watch stuff on TV. I just shake my head because to me, it's almost like songwriting has become a thing of the past. And what they're doing is, it always seems to me like that's been done before. You're not stretching. You're not looking for a new direction. You're just trying to fit in with what's being done. And I don't know whether that's, you know, bands looking for a record deal by doing that. Or to me, it's about enjoying it. And when we started, we're like, we're going to be totally different to any other band. We're going to be ourselves, you know. And it just seems that these days that everybody goes, oh, they're a hit. So let's try and sound like them.
And I would agree, because I think back to the bands that influenced me as a kid, your band being one of them and lots of others. And all those bands have longevity. You remember their songs to this day. You remember their videos. And all the bands that I've interviewed from back then, they're still around, you know, in different, you know, incarnations, you know.
Yeah.
And where I don't know if the bands that are popular today will be talking about them 30 years down the road.
You talk about Disney, you know, because a lot of it just seems to come up from that kind of corporation. It's almost like they have a stranglehold on what's going to be the next thing. You know, it's almost like bands of guys that just get together in a garage and play. I would hate to be doing that these days because I don't see an outlet for them.
Well, Mike, thank you for tuning in and calling into the show today here on The Alternative. And it was great speaking with you about the Flock of Seagulls and your new stuff that you're playing today and writing as well. So thank you for coming on to the show.
Thank you.